Michikowski versus Snohomish County.
Good morning, Your Honor. My name is Rod Moody. I represent Mr. Michikowski in this matter. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes.
Very well.
This is a singular issue that is before this court, and basically the issue addresses the question of whether this is a burden of production or a burden of persuasion on the issue of whether a reasonable trier of fact under these facts could conclude that, in fact, Snohomish County District Court judges, at the time the decision was made to terminate my client's employment, had knowledge that he'd engaged in the protected activity. There was no dispute that, in fact, he engaged in protected activity. There was no dispute that he got fired. The only question is the third element, which is there a causation factor here? In this particular case, Mr. Michikowski followed the policy of the district court. He was told at the time that he was hired as the court administrator that any issues that would arise, he was to report to Judge Tam Bowie, who was at that time the presiding judge of the court. He, in fact, did that. He raised serious safety-related issues that the Department of Labor and Industries ultimately have determined were serious and, in fact, fined the Snohomish County District Court for. So these are
to make your prima facie case, do you have to demonstrate that the voting judges had actual knowledge of the exercise of the protected act?
You have a series of cases. That would be the Rad, Lucky, and Hines decision, all cited by the defense counsel, that would support that proposition. I have shown and argued to the court through my memorandum the factual distinction that is present between the certain circumstances that exist today and the RAD decision, where there were two principals in different schools that had not discussed the individual. Lucky, two supervisors who had never even met.
Doesn't that beg the question, though? I mean, is it part of the standard you have to demonstrate? Second phase is, do the facts get you there here or not?
I've cited you back to the Kimbrough case and dealing with the agency principles that are present. In this situation, I would admit, or
I guess again, that seems to be a, here's a reason why, how we establish knowledge through imputed.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'm asking, do you have to show that? Are we all starting on the same page?
Well, I think you do have to show that, and I think that we have shown that.
Okay.
And here's how we've shown that.
Okay.
My client followed the policy. He reported the safety violations to Judge Bowie, the presiding judge, 3 months before the decision. She, and this is undisputed evidence, that was on August 23rd. August 24th, she forwards an email to Judge Ryan out in the Linwood, the South District Courts. And it is true. She did not include a subject line on the email, nor did she include a copy of the report. But it's a very tersely worded email, which comes essentially unannounced to Judge Ryan for any other reason, my apologies, referencing the memorandum that had been submitted.
Don't ask me to initial. That isn't my job to initial
exactly
things.
Okay. Find your own filing system, basically.
Where does that get you?
In a reasonable trier of fact, I would submit, could conclude that, in fact, that would cause Judge Ryan to at least pick up a phone and have a conversation with Judge Bowie. Why are you sending me this email discussing a memorandum in a very tersely worded manner to district court administrator without sending me a copy of the report?
Is that reasonable suspicion or is that speculation or a hunch?
Well, it goes beyond that, though, because unlike Hines, unlike Lucky, unlike Rad, on December 5th, when the decision is made to terminate his employment, Judge Bowie is not absent. She's present. She is in the room. She is participating in the discussion. And she says, well, I abstained from voting, but a reasonable jury could find that this individual who was present and the policy that was followed by Mr. Michikowski when he reported to his superior 3 months before this decision could conclude that, in fact, the various other six or seven judges had this knowledge.
How much do you need, though? I understand you're often going to be faced with proving that kind of knowledge through circumstantial evidence.
Sure.
At what point is it just, you know, pure speculation? Here the participants say, we never knew that. We didn't discuss it at that meeting. And you're saying, well, I just don't think that's credible.
Well, I'd like to make one, cite one quote to you from the Cordoba decision, which has been cited by counsel. And in Cordoba, they're discussing Kimbrough and the fact that Kimbrough's supervisor was aware and that was a person who was responsible for that type of information. And the court stated, thus, ARCA was essentially arguing that it could avoid liability because its own internal policies had broken down. That is exactly what has taken place here. The internal policies of the Snohomish County District Court broke down because the presiding judge failed in her responsibility to bring the serious safety violation or safety concern, not violation, safety concern to the attention of the other judges. And Snohomish County essentially argues because of this happy circumstance for us, the other judges didn't know, therefore we can avoid liability on this. And I would submit to you that when my client, 3 months prior to the decision to terminate his employment, did in fact what he was required to do, brought the safety concerns to his boss, if you will, the presiding judge, he met his obligation. It was the responsibility of Judge Bowie to notify the other judges. You're right. I don't have the memo that says, yes, we know about this. I don't have the communication. I don't have the phone call between Mr. Michkowski and Judge Fisher, Judge Ryan, Judge, you know, et cetera, because he followed the policy. And essentially the county now argues because you follow the policy and this judge, Judge Bowie, failed to forward this on as she should have done, we can escape liability here because, well, we just didn't know. A reasonable trier of fact, with the knowledge that Judge Bowie had the memorandum, forwarded an email to Judge Ryan, was participating in the discussion, and then in the context, when we get into the details regarding the budgetary issues and the issues regarding the collection agency and the fallacy that is created there, which all addresses the issue of pretext, a jury looking at that could say, you know, this is an excuse. The budgetary issues, the collection agency issues, this is an excuse that is being used to justify the termination when the real reason is what? The memorandum of August 23rd. I don't have direct evidence. I just have the circumstantial.
We don't get to the pretext dimension if you don't get past the prima facie showing, right?
Right. That is correct. Your Honors, that is the issue that's before this court. I really, unless someone has a further question for me, I believe I've made my presentation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. Stephen Bladick appearing on behalf of Snohomish County. This is a case that is directly about you can't act about what you don't know. The county requests that you uphold summary judgment in this retaliatory discharge case regarding relating workplace safety issues under the WSHA statute. As counsel has stated, the issue here is whether there is a causal connection between the termination and raising workplace safety issues. Under the relevant standard, there must be evidence of a substantial factor motivating the decision. Mr. Michkowski cannot show the causal connection because the decision makers, the six judges who voted on his termination, did not know about him raising safety issues in that August 23rd memorandum.
Again, what about the fact of Judge Bowie's participation in that meeting? Does that taint the decision-making process? Does that allow a reasonable inference that, well, she knew about it, so whether she mentioned it, she shaped, may have shaped the discussion to accomplish the evil motive?
In and of itself, no, based on other evidence in the record. Essentially, we have the declarations from all of these judges that they had not seen that memorandum, nor was it discussed at any point in time between Judge Bowie and any of those other judges. We also have evidence that the bailiff safety and training issues were an old issue for the court. This was something that was addressed and before the court at a judge's meeting that was addressed in a memorandum that was discussed when Mr. Michkowski was first hired. It was an old issue. It was something that they were already aware of without having been raised by Mr. Michkowski. There is also evidence that there were specific performance issues that they had a basis to make a termination decision before he ever brought this memorandum to her attention. And just the fact that she was in that discussion in and of itself does not provide that it's pure speculation that she was acting on that basis at all. We also have specifically that there was an issue of bringing this. This was a very short-term employment. We had him hired in January of 2012, and this was a decision in December of 2012. There's evidence, specific evidence in the record that other judges, other than Judge Bowie, wanted his the termination decision made before the end of the year so he wouldn't accrue additional vacation, or there would be determination before he would accrue leave at the beginning of the next year.
If Judge Bowie had voted, would there be a reasonable inference that the decision was made with knowledge of the group?
I think that that would be a fact that could go into the equation, but again, it would be speculation as to whether that was a motivating factor when she's specifically saying it wasn't, and there were all these other avenues as to the reason why that was made, and there was no discussion regarding that issue. I think that it's something that that presents a very different case, but even then, I think we have something that other factors in this factual scenario do not support it.
The appellant, as the non-moving party below, was entitled to inferences. Is it a reasonable inference that it would be really unlikely for Judge Fisher not to have called Judge Bowie after having gotten that email from her and say, why did you send me this email? What's up?
Yes, Judge Ryan.
Judge Ryan.
And I again, I think that if you look at the context of why that would have been sent, I think that the inference is because there's no subject line on this memo. There's no the memo itself is not there. So all this is a discussion about Mr. Michkowski has handed her something and asked her to sign it as evidence that she received it. She refused to do that, and he immediately sends it to her by email. The inference that comes out of that is that she's annoyed that he's taken this tack in dealing with her in an administrative fashion. This is happening directly on the heels of the meeting that Judge Ryan and Judge Bowie had regarding performance expectations and about how he's supposed to handle himself in the court. They're already annoyed with him. They're already dealing with performance issues. The inference that comes out of that is that's what they're dealing with again.
Were the judges deposed in this case, or was it all by declaration?
Judge Bowie was deposed in this case, and there's a reference in the record that at CP 229, I sent a letter to counsel for Mr. Michkowski allowing, you know, that we would make anybody available for deposition that he wanted to take. That was the only deposition that he did take. I think it is a critical aspect in hearing counsel's argument that he's saying that essentially that Mr. Michkowski is being punished because he because Judge Bowie failed to bring his concern to the attention of the other judges. Essentially, he's conceding that there was no passing of that information there. He's relying on this idea of imputed knowledge that I think Cordova versus Dillard's is the critical case here, because the idea of the reporting of knowledge and a duty to report knowledge is for different purposes. Essentially, we have a circumstance where there was this workplace safety issue that was known to the judges, and they had taken some actions to deal with it by saying that the bailiffs were not to carry firearms. Ultimately, under WSHA, the state decided that wasn't enough. But they were already aware of the issue. That knowledge is something that if there had been an injury in that courtroom because of the failure to act on that knowledge, that imputed knowledge could have a duty against the court. What we're talking about is something that's very different here. It's imputing knowledge to act on that specific knowledge. And
in a retaliation claim, there can be occasions where there's clear-cut evidence that the decision-maker knows about the exercise of protected activity. But it's understandable, isn't it, that a lot of times a closed meeting of decision-makers to arrive at a decision to terminate someone, we're not going to have a smoking gun. There's not going to be any direct evidence available about knowledge or lack of knowledge. So why isn't it enough to say, boy, these really circumstances look suspicious,
Because there's just no evidence elsewhere on the record that supports it.
The chief's participating in the discussion.
But we also have positive evidence from all of these judges that it was not discussed in that meeting, nor was there any other discussion. We had discovery in this case. There was thousands of documents produced, and if there were any inclination that there had been any discussion, there could have been something out there in an email of, I want to discuss this, or there's this issue out there, in some way supporting that. Had the opportunity to depose Judge Bowie, and there's nothing that came out of her deposition that would support this in any way. There's nothing from any of the judges that would support this in any way. It's pure speculation to base it just on the fact that meeting occurred and Mr. Michkowski wasn't involved in that meeting, because there's positive evidence saying that it was not discussed. You have to have something more. It's pure speculation to say otherwise just because of the fact a meeting occurred. And essentially, that's the critical point in this case. There's nothing else in the record to support it. I understand what Your Honor is saying regarding essentially a cat's paws theory. There's just nothing in the record to support it. It's also not supported just based on any other factors with the general knowledge in the court. One of the things that's in the briefing is that Mr. Michkowski raises that there was this report written by LNI talking about knowing about the general knowledge that Mr. Michkowski had raised these issues in the court. And the factual, that's just not supported. That's not what that LNI document states. That's actually referring to the bailiff, Mr. Hawkins, and his discussing reporting of safety issues and these same type of safety issues. And he was saying he was not aware of Mr. Michkowski having raised these issues. He had raised these issues. He had never been retaliated against in any way. Again, other positive evidence that having raised these issues, they were generally known throughout the court without regard to Mr. Michkowski, and that nothing had happened for someone else raising those issues. If Your Honors don't have any additional questions, I don't have anything further.
Thank you, Counsel.
Very briefly, Your Honors. Just like in a discrimination case under 496180, rarely are you going to have the direct memo that says, I hate people of, and fill in the category under 496180 of your choice. This is a burden of production, not a burden of persuasion at this level. All that I'm required to do under RAD is to produce evidence that would permit a reasonable trier of fact that a party charged with engaging in retaliatory behavior was aware the employer engaged in the protected activity. The presiding judge was aware of it. The presiding judge sent an email immediately to another judge within the district about this very issue. The presiding judge was present in the meeting and participating in the discussion regarding the decision to terminate employee. I respectfully submit that a reasonable trier of fact from that evidence, particularly when you combine all the baseless allegations and arguments that are made, and we can spend my 2 minutes going through all those if we want, but I don't think we need to. When a jury considers the fact that there is no validity to the other allegations made as the basis for the termination, the reason for his termination was because he raised what is in fact an admitted serious violation. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And that concludes our